Hi, I'm Liz, and this is Church of the King's online worship experience. I am a staff member of Church of the King. I have been for about 10 years. I've been around a long time. So if you guys have gotten to know Pastor Todd or Pastor Josh or Pastor Chris, y'all are really lucky. I've been around them a long time, and I know that they're amazing men. I've had the absolute honor of serving with them for that long. But right now, I work with an organization called SWLA Responds, like I said. SWLA Responds is a rebuild organization that's working post-hurricane in the SWLA area, in Lake Charles and surrounding areas. And that organization has done a lot of work. A lot of work since October of last year. That's kind of when we started. We have clocked about 25,000 volunteer hours, and I realize you may not have a frame of reference for that, but that is an incredible amount of work to happen in just 11 months. We've brought in about 2,500 volunteers. Again, that's a big number, but let me break it down just a little bit further. In just the past 2 months, so in June and July, we have worked alongside 800 volunteers. That's 8 weeks. 800 individuals have come through and done amazing work. If you average that out, that averages to about 100 people a week that we have been facilitating work for. We've been working in homes all around the area. And that requires a lot of prep work, as you can imagine. And that prep work, that's my job. It's been a lot. And I have been pushed to breaking points so many times. That's not a unique situation to me. Many of us experience that. Many of us have been in those situations in our work, in our family. And so after working through all of that, and basically it felt like climbing a mountain. We did all of this incredible work. We spent all of this time. And we clocked amazing hours. These are things to be celebrated. And we celebrated them. It was awesome. But the other side of a mountaintop is a valley. My valley was COVID. Not fun. My daughter, actually, went to camp. And joy of all joys, preteen camp, she brought COVID home with her. It was amazing. Not amazing, actually, at all. My three daughters got sick, and then they decided to share it with me. They all recovered in about 3 days. Took me about 3 weeks. I feel like I'm a relatively healthy person. Surely I can fight off bugs. Last time I was sick was like 9 years ago, and I had the flu for 3 days. That's not that big a deal. I have never experienced anything like this. So COVID was quite a valley for me. I got shut off from all of the action. I got shut off from everything that was going on. I was isolated in my room, mostly just in my bed, not able to be around even my own family in a lot of cases or a lot of instances, and just exhausted. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like that. Maybe it wasn't COVID, but maybe you've walked through a depression, or maybe you've walked through a scenario that you just felt like you weren't going anywhere, or like you were just completely separate from the people around you. Those situations can breed a certain kind of, I guess it just makes you feel like you're detached from the people you care about, from the things you care about. It makes you feel separate and apart from them. And I don't like that feeling. I don't know about you, but I really can't stand that feeling. And so for me, coming back to work, coming back to something, as you can imagine, serving the city of Lake Charles and helping to rebuild, that's purpose. That's impactful. There's a lot going on. There are a lot of people's lives who are being touched, and that's a big deal for me. So being separate from that and then coming back into it and starting to get my feet wet again, starting to make progress and move, though slow, because COVID's no fun. It was slow progress, but in that process, I began to feel like I had been disconnected from my team, from my teammates, from the people I cared about. And that disconnection began to breed some frustration. There's actually someone in the Bible who experienced frustration. It was kind of dramatic. And maybe mine was too. So in experiencing that frustration, I had a conversation with a coworker of mine who was incredibly kind and incredibly gracious with me. I began to tell him about how I felt and how I felt like I had been isolated. I felt like meetings were happening without me and I wasn't getting information and people weren't sharing things with me. I felt like maybe it wasn't just COVID. Maybe they had decided I didn't need to be part of the team. Maybe they decided I didn't add value. Have you ever been in a situation like that? Maybe with a relationship or a friendship or in your work life. It's such a hard thing to begin to feel like you don't have value, you can't add, when you know there's something in there that you can give. And that's where I was. So I had this conversation with my teammate, and he was very gracious, and he began to point out the areas where maybe I wasn't applying the right filter. He took my frustration, because when you're frustrated and you have these conversations, that frustration can be communicated to the person you're talking to, even if you're not upset with them. It can be shared that way. And I did that. And therefore, I had to make a phone call later and apologize because I was a little too intense. That never happens, by the way. I'm never like that. Well, there was someone in the Bible who experienced something like that. He got really frustrated and he shared his frustration. And his name was Elijah. Elijah was a prophet to the nation of Israel. And we pick up his story in 1 Kings. I'm going to read through portions of 1 Kings 18 and 19, just kind of tell the story. We pick it up in 1 Kings 18, verse 16. It says, "And Ahab went out to meet Elijah. When Ahab saw him, he exclaimed, 'So is it really you, you troublemaker of Israel?'" Ouch. Ahab's a king, guys. The king just called him a troublemaker. Oof. Well, at this point, Elijah's feeling bold. He's kind of on the mountaintop. He's approaching the mountain. He says, "I have made no trouble for Israel. You and your family are the troublemakers. You have refused to obey the commandments of the Lord and have worshipped the images of Baal instead." Elijah had a little sass there, I think. Maybe he was prone. I don't know. So we'll skip down. We're at verse 19 now. "Now summon all Israel and join me at Mount Carmel, along with the 450 prophets of Baal." Okay, let's clock people. He's met a king. He's sassed at a king. He's calling in 450 prophets of Baal. So that's two groups. Well, I guess a king is an individual. Whatever. Two groups. The 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who are supported by Jezebel. Jezebel's the queen, so Ahab's wife. "So Ahab summoned all the people of Israel." So now we're talking about a whole nation. King, 450 prophets, 400 prophets, nation of Israel. "Ahab summoned the people of Israel and the prophets of Mount Carmel. Then Elijah stood in front of them and said, 'How much longer will you waver, hobbling between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, then follow him.' And the people were completely silent and they didn't have anything to say. Then Elijah said to them, 'I am the only prophet of the Lord who is left, but Baal has 450 prophets.'" See, Jezebel had killed all the prophets before then. They couldn't find Elijah, which is why he's still alive here. So he's the only one left. He's not lying. "Now bring two bulls. The prophets of Baal may choose whichever one they wish and cut it into pieces and lay it on wood of their altar, but without setting fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood on my altar, but I will not set fire to it. Then call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answers by setting fire to the bull is the one true God." And all the people of Israel, guess what? They can talk this time. They're not mute. They all agreed. So, let me talk through what happened here. The prophets of Baal, they put their offering up there. They built their little altar. They laid the wood. They did what Elijah told them to do, and they put their bull up there. And then they began, 450 people began to dance around the altar, calling their God. "Oh, Baal, oh, Baal, bring fire. Set it on fire. Would you? Would you?" And they did this from the morning through noontime. And around noon, Elijah's feeling real bold, okay? Real bold. So he was sassy before, and now he's like another level. Around noon, he starts to taunt them. This is really funny. It's actually really, really funny. So I'm going to read it so I don't mess it up. "About noontime, Elijah began mocking them. 'You'll have to shout louder,' he scoffed, 'for surely he is a god. Perhaps he's daydreaming. Or maybe he's on the toilet. Or maybe he's away on a trip. Or he's asleep. And you need to wake him up. So he's taunting them. He said their God was on the toilet. Come on, guys. What is that? He's very, very bold. So the prophets of Baal, they do this through the evening time. And finally, Elijah's like, okay, it's my turn. So Elijah comes in. He cuts up the bull. He does what he's supposed to. He builds the altar like he's supposed to. He puts the wood on it. And he doesn't just put wood on it. He takes four jars. Well, he has people around him dig a trench around the altar first. He takes four jars of water and douses the altar and everything there, the wood, the bowl, all of it. He douses it with water. And then he fills the trench with water. I think maybe he was setting up quite a spectacle. The prophets of Baal, you know, there was no water. It was just wood and, you know, maybe somebody needed a magnifying glass or something. It could have started a fire and just called it Baal. I don't know. They didn't do that. Elijah set up this whole thing where it could only be God, right? It can only be God because no man can make that happen, even with a magnifying glass. You're not starting a fire on that. So he douses the whole thing with water and he prays and he says, God, so that these people know who you are, for your name's sake, show them who you are. Show them that you're the one true God. And guess what? Fire came down from heaven, lit the altar, burned everything to ash, and lapped up all the water. So there is nothing left. Not only is there no bowl, there's no altar, and there's no water left. Everything gone, because our God is the one true God. And he wanted to be known. This was Elijah. He had no support, no backing. He had nothing, but he had the boldness of who God was. He knew who God was and what he was capable of, and he was willing to walk in. And I would call that a mountaintop. I don't know about you. I think his mountain's a little bigger than mine. Mine felt good. I'm sure his felt amazing. It was such an incredible accomplishment. He faced an entire nation, a king, and all the prophets, and called down fire from heaven as himself. He had no support system. That was incredible. But let's look at what happens afterward. Because things change, right? Because after the mountain, there's a valley. So, after all of this happened, oh, by the way, after this, they had been in a 3-year famine. And after this, Elijah prays for rain. And it rains. After 3 years of no rain, Elijah prays and he sends his servant off 7 times, I think. And on the 7th time, the servant comes back and says, there's a cloud the size of my hand. And Elijah said, it's about to downpour. Go tell Ahab he better leave because he's going to get flooded out. And then on top of that, Elijah on foot beats Ahab back. And Ahab's in a chariot. God did some miraculous things there, I think. He's got quite a mountain to look back on. But so often we forget the mountain. So often we forget what God's done. And really, sadly, almost immediately. So I'm going to go 1 Kings 19. So we're at verse 1. When Ahab got home, he told Jezebel, Jezebel's his wife. He told Jezebel, and she's also the one who killed all the prophets. When Ahab got home, he told Jezebel everything Elijah had done, including the way he had killed all the prophets of Baal. So after the prophets of Baal were not able to call down fire, and Elijah did, he had the people of Israel take in the prophets and slaughter them all, like Jezebel did, to the prophets of the Lord. So Ahab tells Jezebel that he slaughtered all these prophets, and Jezebel sends this message to Elijah. This is the thing. She says, may the God strike me and even kill me if by this time tomorrow I have not killed you just as you killed those prophets. Okay, didn't we just establish that God's not real? Like, didn't we just invite that God to call down fire and he wasn't able to do it? I realize Israel, at that time there were a lot of gods, but we just challenged him. And nothing happened, okay? But let's look at Elijah's reaction. His reaction is that he was afraid for his life and he fled. Well, maybe I'm not so crazy, because Elijah hit a higher mountaintop than I've ever hit, and he still lost focus on where God was and all of that, and he still ran. He still, well, let's read a little further. We'll see. Elijah got frustrated. I'm switching to another version here because sometimes I like to go back and forth. Before, I was reading from NLT, and I'm going to be on the NASB this time, but it says, "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree." By the way, a broom tree, not shady. It's kind of like sticky and spiky. "He sat down under a broom tree and he asked for himself to die." This is what he told God. Maybe he's dramatic. He says, "Enough! Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's." After all God's done, he's challenged by one person and he asks to die. Okay, so he gets frustrated. I get it. And frustration in terms, frustration is a mild version of anger, right? I get that. But anger is defined as a secondary emotion. Anger is usually inspired by fear. My mama used to tell me that the root of anger is fear. She would always say that. The root of anger is fear. And she would tell me that at times when I was so frustrated or so upset, and it would only make me more mad, because she would stop me dead in my tracks. And she'd be like, "What are you afraid of? You're mad, but what are you afraid of?" And it would make me feel vulnerable. And I didn't really like that, because I wanted to be mad. I wanted to be angry. I wanted to express what I was feeling. She would stop me dead in my tracks. And so let's apply that to Elijah. Well, he had a reason to be afraid. I mean, Jezebel had said she was going to kill him, but Jezebel had been trying to kill him, right? I mean, maybe she upped the ante and said, "By this time tomorrow." But really, I mean, this is not a new effort, right? Like, she's been trying to kill him. Why is he reacting so extremely to what she said? I don't know. I can't tell you for certain, but I can tell you what I feel like God has spoken to me in my frustration. Elijah faced an entire nation, but he faced an entire nation because he knew God was going to do something great. But when his life was threatened, he lost all of his boldness. What do you think he was afraid of? I don't think it's Jezebel. I honestly think that sometimes, this is what God showed me, sometimes it's so much easier to have faith in God on the God-sized projects. So for me, I believe God is going to heal this city. I believe God is going to heal this area. I know he can do it. I know it. But do I have that same faith when it comes to things that are maybe something that I can hold? Do I have that same faith when it comes to my own house? My house is still destroyed. I'm still waiting for that to be resolved. Do I believe that God is going to care for my home and me the way that I think he's going to care for the city as a whole? How is it that I can disconnect myself from the whole nation, from the whole city, from the whole community, and believe that, yeah, he loves the community, but maybe not me. Maybe he's not caring for me individually. Well, that reaction is not a good one. And honestly, that kind of reaction can breed frustration in relationships. It can break relationships down. And we don't want to do that, because our purpose and our plan is tied to our community. So how do we deal with it then? Well, let's start here. We need to remember who God is. God tells us who he is. It's in his word. And I'm going to read a couple verses. You can Google a list. I would suggest that you go and read it, because sometimes the Googled version is altered. But go and read it. Let me give you a couple examples. Job 1:5. God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. Psalms 54:4. Surely God is my help. The Lord is the one who sustains me. Psalm 62:7 and 8. My salvation and honor depend on God. He is my mighty rock. He is my refuge. Trust in him at all times. O you people, pour out your hearts to him. God is your refuge. So if he's my refuge, he's light, which means he can't do anything wrong. He can't do anything in darkness. Maybe I should believe that he is who he says he is. If I can believe that about him, then maybe I can believe what he says about me. And let's go into that, right? Jeremiah 29:11, this is Pastor Todd's favorite verse, right? You hear him say it all the time. I know the plans I have for you. Plans for prosperity and not for calamity, not for disaster. To give you a future and a hope. You don't have to live in disaster. God has a future and a hope. You may be in a disaster, but he has a future purpose for you and he will walk you through to the end of it. What about Luke 7:12? The very hairs on your head are numbered. Don't be afraid. You are more valuable to God than a whole flock of sparrows. Sparrows who are innocent. They don't get frustrated. They don't get grumpy at people, right? I'm more valuable to him with all of my emotions and all of my uncertainty and all of my, I don't know, just inability to stay steady and faithful. I'm more important and you are too. The next thing is, don't give up. So many times when we get frustrated, we just want to quit and we want to walk away. And you cannot do that because your purpose and your future and the future of the people who are depending on you, which by the way, is more than just your family, the future of the people who are depending on you depends on your ability to not quit. And God promises that he will walk with you through the end. You can do this and you don't have to do it alone. I know I talked a little bit before about community and how incredibly important it is. Community is everything in this. And I don't mean like your community is going to make you, okay? I don't mean like just go get some friends. I mean, get the kind of friends who are going to point you back to God. They're around. They're available. Come to Church of the King. Join a small group. Small groups will be launching here pretty quickly. Join a serve team. Serve with me. You can come serve with me at Southwest Louisiana Responds. There are opportunities for that. You can go to SWLAResponds.org and sign up to volunteer there. We can just use a couple hours of your time, but I will tell you that the team I get to work with is a family. We get to serve this community together and serve one another, and it's a beautiful thing, and those people are the ones who have kept me steady through my frustration. So I hope that today you have had an opportunity to work through. Maybe the next time you're frustrated, you'll know what to do. God is a good God, and he's faithful to us, even when we're not faithful to him, even when we make mistakes. Trust him. He's with you. I hope you guys have an amazing day, and come back next week. Somebody else will be here. It won't be me. Y'all have a great day. Bye.